Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Beneath the endless expanse of the Pacific sky, a remote and windswept island holds secrets as monumental as its iconic Moai statues. This isolated outpost, known to its ancient inhabitants as Rapa Nui, whispers of mysteries not just earthly, but perhaps celestial in origin. For centuries, the Moai have stood silent vigil over the island, their origins and purpose a puzzle that has perplexed archaeologists and historians alike. Yet, local lore and emerging theories suggest these might not be mere tributes to ancient chieftains, but markers of something far more profound. Echoes of an extraterrestrial encounter that might have influenced the island's early civilization. This case file, join the theorists as we explore the shadows cast by these giant figures and the starlit secrets they might hold on Easter Island.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 339. Easter Island Apocalypse, Rapa Nui, Graham Hancock, Ancient Apocalypse. Did I hit
Did
all
you
the
say
tags?
Ancient Apocalypse, sorry.
Or right. Apocalypse Now. I'm Braden. Yeah.
I'm Zell.
I'm Tan.
And I'm Andrew. That might be Get your best back. Work.
Mm-hmm. That was great. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got good. The number right.
One take, yeah.
Impressed. Not bad.
And he said, use all the keywords. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm. Did you miss the Younger Dryas? You missed ancient civilization.
Megalithically hard.
Sea level rise. Yeah. Ice age. You missed all those, but that's fine. Yeah, let it slide. We'll put him in the show notes. Make sure to hit them all.
Get up there. This was a fun one. I didn't realize how little I knew about Easter Island until looking into this.
It's pretty cool. Everyone knows the heads.
Like, you know what's funny? I didn't even realize.
I didn't know they had bodies.
I didn't know that island is in the middle of the goddamn Pacific. I didn't
middle
realize.
Of nowhere. Yeah.
Like, it is absolutely isolated.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Like, it's so far out there. It's insane.
Yeah. I watched that Ancient Apocalypse episode with my wife. And not to trash her at all or anything, but she was like, complete, like, I had no idea this existed. This is insane.
It is insane. Doesn't seem.
Like, I agree.
Like,
it is insane.
It seems like no people should have ever been there.
Well, let alone making giant fucking stone poetons.
It does look all over the poeton. Island. That's very good call.
Yeah.
Either that or like Rocky Dennis from The Mask.
Yeah. Movie? Yeah. Right? But like when he puts on the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I know. Everyone knows Easter Island as the name Easter Island. So I think what Dan kind of has it laid out here, we're going to give you the quick like mainstream background on Easter Island, who we think lived there, how long, who built the heads, how long ago. And then we're going to go down some theories. Yeah. Then we're going down some theories.
So
because is this thing, it is isolated, but was it always that inaccessible?
Yeah. And like, where did the original eggs come from?
Mm-hmm. The eggs is something I didn't know at all.
Well, that's what I want to know is like, how did this small island in the middle Pacific know to hide their eggs from Jesus too?
I don't get it.
Right?
Or did Jesus hide the eggs there? That's a great spot that isolated fucking little island's a great spot to hide eggs.
This whole thing is just a long hunt. Long con.
For eggs.
yeah.
From a bunny.
people might have guessed, right? It's Easter Island. Is that the traditional name for it, since it was inhabited before the Europeans first discovered it in 1722 on Easter Sunday, and hence the name Easter Island.
Very creative. What day is it? Easter. All right.
All right, that's what it is. It was discovered by, or not discovered, but Europeans, the first to arrive, were Dutch explorer Jacob Roggeveen and his crew. And so Easter Island is very much the one of the most isolated places in the world. It's about, let's see, it's pretty much in the middle of the southeastern Pacific Ocean. So it's
middle
about
of the ocean. 20...
Yep, about 2,300 miles west of Chile, and it's nearest...
No, say the bigger version, Dan. 3,700 kilometers.
3,700 kilometers.
Sounds even farther away.
which is its nearest continental neighbor, and then it's about 1,300 miles or 2,100 kilometers from Pitcairn Island, which is its closest inhabited neighbor island. So, yes, it is extremely isolated from anywhere else.
And like, just to appreciate, like, honestly, if you've heard of Easter Island and you've, you know, heard of the heads and stuff, just do yourself a favor and Google, like I went on and Google Maps did after to look, and I was like, Jesus, it's unbelievable how isolated it is.
You gotta zoom in to see it.
Yes. It's like it's how fucking... the finding of this island by these guys is like pure happen chance. Just like, look at that. Holy, lucked out on that one. Any which way you missed, like, you would have missed it.
You've been another month sailing.
Yeah.
Or you fucking found something else.
The island is relatively small. It's only about 63 square miles or 164 square kilometers in size. And I think most people are familiar with the Moai, or the large stone statues that make Easter Island. It's, you know, it's gives it its mystique, most of it. So the island is also known by the indigenous peoples known as Rapa Nui, which is probably what we'll probably interchangeably refer to as Easter Island or Rapa Nui.
I've been calling it Rapa Nui ever since I found out that that's what it's called. Someone brings up Easter Island, I mean, like, you talking about Rapa Nui? Come on.
Yeah. I mean, now everybody can use that whenever they talk about it. And so the isolation of Rapa Nui is really what defined the inhabitants of the people who live there. The environment is known to have been extremely harsh when the Europeans arrived. It was very limited resources on the island. And so the people who live there, at least there's a lot of evidence that they came up with a lot of like innovative ways to kind of subsist on what the island gave it. So, and we'll talk about those.
And the island didn't give it a lot at all.
We're 164
wasteland, basically
164 square kilometers. It's like it's a small city. Like,
and the
area wise.
Yeah. And the population, the estimates, there are a lot of mysteries about Easter Island besides just the construction of the heads. And one of them is also being like what the actual size of the population had been. Like, estimates have kind of gone between anywhere between 15,000 people at some time. And maybe it's high point versus like maybe not higher than 3,000 or 4,000.
Yeah. Well,
newer studies.
It was 15,000 when Jacob Roggeveen came, and then he sneezed and the population dropped to 3,000 like overnight. They just wiped
him
out.
Between that and the ones they decided to take for slaves and kill. And
there's definitely a part of the slave trade during this time. Yeah.
Horrible.
Aside from those, you have the Moai, which are the impressive stone statues that's kind of pepper all over Easter Island. I mean, they're like all over the place.
It's scattered everywhere. Like, if you were to like see pictures when I went through and like was looking at all the pictures of the Moai, it's like some of them, it just looks like people were like, fuck that one. It's I'll leave it half laying in the bushes over there. And then there's like another one 30 feet away, laying the other way, half buried. You're like, there's seemingly no rhyme or reason for how these things are scattered.
Well, it probably has a lot to do with time, but there are like some of them that are placed intentionally.
Well, let's stop right there, because there is, like, through this culture, they would stand these statues up and they would signify like their actual like ancestors, and they put like coral as the eyes and like obsidian for the pupils. And once they put that in, they called it mana. I just know mana from Diablo, but pretty much like their spiritual life force. And they were like symbolize that their ancestors were in the statue by placing those eyes and shit. So they would actually place these eyes on old or on like a flat rock foundation, lift them up somehow and place them there. Dozens of them. But then what Braden's talking about, the ones that are scattered are actually way up on the dormant volcano, and they're buried and scattered. I think there's almost 400 they've counted that are visible at least. And they theorize that even there could be actually more.
I thought there was like 1,000.
Well, there's 400 that are visible, and they theorize that there could be way more than that are actually fully buried. Because there's been very minimal excavation on them.
So the Moai statues themselves vary in size, but most of them stand between 13 and 33 feet, or 4 to 10 meters, and weigh anywhere from 10 to 80 tons. Jesus. The largest one is nearly 72 feet or 22 meters long and is known as El Gigante. And it probably would have weighed around 145 tons had it been fully completed, because like you guys are mentioning, like some of the ones that are scattered around are ones that were, most of them think like weren't completed, or perhaps there was like a flaw. I think we talked about this kind of, it was in Baalbek. We talked about how some of the larger pillars and some of those things, like they didn't dig them out because there's probably some kind of flaw or something with it that they figured out, or they just never completed construction on some of these.
A flaw halfway through chiseling this rock. You're like, fuck, yep, leave it. Well, start again.
I'll come back to this theory, but I have a theory on why some of them are stood and some of them are buried.
Many of the statues are placed on these stone platforms, which you guys mentioned before, which are called Ahu. And these kind of, they served as their ceremonial sites. Like a lot of them, I think, are placed, like they place them near villages, and they would place them like facing their backs to the ocean. The significance being that these things are, they are represent the ancestral spirits of family members and, you know, people who had, you know, chiefs or whatever, but they would watch over the people, you know, providing them with good luck and fortune and keeping them safe is their responsibility. So like a lot of the qualities that a lot of them have similar qualities across the statues. A lot of them have a lot of things in common. There's the the deep set eyes, which you guys had mentioned before, and a lot of them had these original, because now when you look at them, like all of this is kind of gone. You miss all out probably a lot of the coloring that these since they have experienced a ton of weathering and probably weren't,
I mean, they all had the same kind of head shape. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like what you're picturing in your head. I mean, a lot of them have that kind of look. I mean, the ears and stuff for vary and other stuff, but like for the most part, it's kind of uniform. Like the look,
the ears. It's kind of funny because in Ancient Apocalypse, they actually talked to like a resident of the island, and he explains the different kinds of ears. And he's like, some of his ancestors were like long ears. They stretched their ears out, and some different like clans would have short ears, and it was kind of like a warring faction, I guess.
How do you distinguish yourself between long ears?
The short ears. It's like in Rick and Morty, the pointy nipples or the circle nipples.
You know, if everybody on your island is 99%, you know, like all look the same. You know, how else, like you fucking, how else are you going to tell who you hate except by lengthening out your ears so you can fight on sight?
It's like the fucking Sneetches is what we're saying.
Yeah. Stars on ours.
Yeah.
A lot of the shapes are generally the same, where they have these very minimalist torsos. So the torsos are considered like a little bit shorter, and then they have like their arms are like aren't as defined, and they have the large, you know, the large elongated head.
The detail definitely dips off below the neck.
Yep. And then like you guys said, like a lot of the a lot of the things, like, people aren't aware that it's not just the heads. Like, a lot of the Moai actually have bodies, which are mostly buried underneath. And then when these were excavated, it was then that, you know, archaeologists realized that a lot of the Moai have, like, intricate carvings detailed on their backs, like a lot of stuff built there that had been covered by sediment over time.
Well, and then they've really got those really cool belts with, like, kind of the H symbol for the belt buckle that we've kind of seen before, with their hands kind of placed right on their belly with their like really elongated, bizarre looking fingers. And it's cool because we've kind of seen these similar features before in Göbekli Tepe with those pillars and the drawings on the carvings on there. They have the exact same hands with the exact same belt buckles, which is really bizarre.
Not only Göbekli Tepe, but in, I think I wrote it down here, it was Sulawesi, which is in Indonesia. So another like Polynesian kind of territory. The same type, same looking statues with the same eyes and like the long fingers and like the same like belt buckle or like place on the, across the navel like that.
What's weird. And then like the other thing that I've always kind of thought of, because you look at the heads and the heads are very alien looking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the shape. But then when you think about it too, it's like, I'm going to butcher this. Dan's going to remember, but it's like, I think it's one of the old, like it's a Brazilian god, Veronica or Viracocha, where he's that beard. He's the god, like the big bearded god. Right. And he has very similar features as, the Moai as well. And then you look at the faces again, you're like, are those elongated jaws or are they all bearded? Because if you look at it, it's shaped exactly like a beard.
It's like a nicely trimmed hipster beard, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Right? And it's like, is that intentional? Because then also they have the weird red caps on, some of them have those weird red caps on their head, whereas Viracocha had red hair as well. Like it's just, the similarities are fucking...
Well, those stories wild. Of ancient cultures all seem, and like, you know, they always start with some type of flood myth, and there's always like some seven sages who came to the land and instilled knowledge and all this stuff.
The seven Moai that are raised up on the platform, they're the only ones that aren't facing the volcano.
Right.
Like that's fucking
like signifying like the ancestors or whatever.
Well, the fact that the Moai, they have their own stories of like the seven and like a flood as well. And on this isolated island, that's basically away from all other cultures, it has a very similar story with this.
It's crazy. Like every culture seems to have a flood story, down to like the Sumerians.
But even with the seven, like the seven, you know, that number pops up everywhere.
Well, this the oral traditions of the people of Rapa Nui say that there was this like ancient king, Hiva, Hiva was the original home. It was an island destroyed by a flood, and it was King Huta Matua was warned of this. Huta Matua, great name.
Huta Matua.
But I guess the oral traditions are this king was warned of like an impending disaster. So he sent seven explorers in seafaring canoes to search out the next home, and that home ended up being Rapa Nui.
Just like the alien race that left Mars and came to Earth and started.
Right, so that's that same, that like the seven... the seven explorers, the seven sages, the seven, it's always seven. These seven people like show up and like instill like tradition on wherever these stories pop up. It's super weird.
It's weird.
So with the advent of the European discovery of Rapa Nui, we lost a lot of the actual history of Easter Island. A lot of the indigenous history is kind of almost wiped out, because the theory is that, you know, already they were experiencing a kind of decline in their civilization at some point, and then are on the island civilization. And then when the Europeans arrived, that just exacerbated the ish, like the entire thing, where it's like they were mainly passing down their history through like oral histories. There was, and we'll probably talk about it, there is evidence that they did have a written language called Rongo.
Yeah. But no,
there was definitely those. So wooden tablets found with kind of like hieroglyphic looking shapes.
Yeah.
So no one knows how to, everyone's like, you speak wrong, go wrong. They're like, no, not me.
Yeah,
not
it,
no, it's too early to get into theories
about Rongo Rongo, or just in general? About
in general, because it's
no, just fucking go ahead. Let's hear it.
I could tie it in later when we get crazy, but like, what if they never knew the history, this civilization?
Well, that would make sense,
right?
That would
like, make what if sense they never understood Rongo Rongo? Maybe they just didn't know. Maybe that's why it didn't get passed down.
Well, that's a good point, because a lot of people theorize that these wooden Rongo Rongos, like carved in wood, are just copies of previous something they Rongos. Found previously.
Well, I was looking at some other examples, and you can look at like the ancient languages in like the Indus Valley and stuff, and it looks exactly like Rongo Rongo.
Well, yeah, so that's the great mystery of these Rongo Rongo tablets, as they look similar to like Egypt or the Indus Valley and stuff, but the characters, they're not the same language at all. So it seems like whatever this is was one of the few times in known human history that a civilization developed its own written language.
Yeah.
But they don't know what that language, they don't know what the culture is.
One really interesting thing that I found out about it was that Rongo Rongo, as they know, is it's actually has a lot of features of what known as reverse Boshtefeden, which is a type of language where it's like a written language where it goes actually, it doesn't, you know, languages can be read left to right. Most of them are left to right or right to left. And then this one actually goes in alternating lines. So you would write you read all the way out down to the end of the line. Then you'd like go down and then you go back. And then
that's more efficient. Direction. That's way more efficient.
Yeah.
That was really,
yeah. Easy on the eyes down. Yeah,
you could read way faster,
way faster.
So that was it's just really cool that they have like the people of this island had these unknown tablets that are now just, they're only in museums.
Right. They're in museums or like private collections. Cause that's a problem that a lot of archaeologists and linguists are having with studying these things. It's like, they're all in collections and spread out all over the world. So it's difficult to get them all in one place to actually study them.
Let's have a conference. All right. Let's bring them all in for a good month. Have the best people look at them. Because if this is
give them back to Rapa Nui, like why do they have to fucking
slap some AI on
there? I don't know. There might still be one or two on the island. I don't, and their museums. I'm not sure, but
like, do you think that's an interesting point, Dan? Do you think in the future, you know, you could have AI look at these things and give a better guess than humans trying to decipher these mysterious languages?
I think the problem is that. Like with Rongo Rongo, and like you guys mentioned earlier, civilizations, like a lot of like human inventions, like it's like they've been invented before and it's like, maybe you just forgot about it. Like that, like certain inventions can, like who invented the lever, you know, who invented that? John Lever.
Well, yeah. Some stuff could be invented in different cultures at different times, and it has happened writing, but only a few times, and then all of the writing is derived from that we know of. Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, if you know, other civilizations or small small societies could have evolved or kind of created their own written languages, and like they're completely gone and what's lost, we don't know. If it was a small society and it was taken over by another, you know, absorbed by another larger culture, and then they kind of wiped out all their stuff, and it's like you wouldn't even know if they had developed some of these things like independently. And Rongo Rongo is one of the best examples we have because it's kind of relatively recent. Like when they knew about Rongo Rongo, like they didn't find out about these tablets till like, what was it, like it wasn't described until 1864, so it was like 100 years after it had been discovered or something like that, right? Let's see, 1722. So it's like almost like more than 100 years. Then they actually found out like, wait, you guys
have these,
they have a written language.
Or someone had a written language in this area.
And then by that time, like the indigenous people had already been decimated, and like the entire, like what culture that they did have had been already, you know, some people use the term tainted by the European influences there. So you're not sure, like, if Rongo Rongo, did it pop up before that, or was it something that they came up with on their own? So there's still like some debate as to whether the origins of Rongo Rongo are completely isolated, or is it something that
came or up is later? It the language of a lost pre-diluvian Younger Dryas civilization, Dan?
Right.
Right? That's where we're going.
That's where I'm going.
You could feel it. Everyone was listening. It's like, is that where they're going?
That's where we're going.
This week must be Zell's pick.
I'm fucking rock hard on this one. Honestly, super cool. Because the island itself and the heads and the culture, it's all really cool. But obviously, Hancock goes always pushing boundaries, you know? Always poking around, making people really mad at him, calling him racist. Looking at ancient cultures, married to a Indian woman, but he's a racist. All this crazy. People just attack this guy so hard just for coming up with cool stuff. But some of the stuff of this one is really, really cool. So we've talked about Younger Dryas. We've talked about Atlantis, possible ancient civilizations. So we have an island in the middle of nowhere currently. Like we're 3,200 kilometers from the nearest main shore and another whatever from the next island, like habitable island. But if you were to drain the oceans back down to pre-ice age levels, right? Easter Island is actually at the end of a right now submerged mountain chain.
Is it called an archipelago at that, where it's like islands all in a row? Is that what that's called?
I don't know. I guess so. Yes. I'm going to say yes. It was an archipelago, a really big one. So I heard that on Ancient Apocalypse. I heard that Graham Hancock's theory, and I was like, okay, well, let me fucking just pull this up.
Yeah, it is an archipelago.
Archipelago. So what I had to do is I had to go find a website that would drain the ocean for me and show me exactly what I need to see.
So if you pull up a Minecraft map, I'm going to fucking lose my mind.
This is some university. I have no idea. It's arcgis.com/apps/view/index, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so this is Easter Island, a topographical blurry thing, right? But if I zoom out, I'm just going to keep zooming out. If you're watching the live stream, you'll be able to see it. If not, you can do this on your own. And this is what the bottom of the ocean looks like with no water, all these mountain ridges. So right here on my cursor, do you see my cursor on the screen?
Yeah.
So anyways, all of these, it wasn't continuous. Like you couldn't have walked this whole way. But all of these would have been exposed. Like you could have sailed from one to the other or swam. A lot of them you could have swam between. Like this huge ridge and Easter Island being at the end. And when you get to the mainland, which is modern day Peru.
And it's like right in line with this mountain range here that you're following. Like when you follow it, the natural rise to the coastline. That's what I found the most interesting about this is when you hit Peru, there's a geoglyph instantly.
Yeah, there's a geoglyph right in line with the end of this mountain chain, this archipelago. And it's called, I wrote that down too somewhere. It's a weird name. You guys remember what it was?
No, it's the big one with all the lines though.
It's like El Candelabre or something. It's a giant candle or like a trident looking thing. Candelabre of the Andes of Peru, signifying the coast and the end of the journey, question mark. That was my note. So pretty much you could either start it or ended in this line and it wouldn't have been like such an isolated journey. Like you wouldn't have had to sail for 3,200 kilometers pre Younger Dryas, obviously, right? We're going way back. So sea levels are 400 feet lower. And so 400 feet lower also, I could stop sharing that. 400 feet lower also makes Easter Island like 10 times the size. So much more room for a population. And like most modern day civilizations, great cities are built on the coast or the end of a river or somewhere that makes shipping easy. And they haven't done any of like underwater LIDAR or anything like that off the coast of Easter Island. So obviously Hancock's...
Didn't they find a bunch of Moai in the water? Like on the...
Did they find some in the water?
Yeah. I was just reading something where they've seen, like there's pictures of them too. I guess they don't need LIDAR. They could have just used scuba divers.
Perhaps, because it's going to be between, just a few feet underwater or up to 400 feet off the coast of the island. So obviously there's no evidence, or is there, of civilization before, what did they say, 1400 to 1700 AD, something like that. 13th to 16th centuries is when they think, like, the Polynesians, the great sailors of the Pacific Ocean, came across, set up shop, all that. But what they've now found is they found evidence that someone brought bananas to the island. And these bananas, like these banana fibers of the plant, which I guess are not native to this island, are at least 3,000 years old of what they found so far. So now we're going back a couple thousand years before the modern timeline, right? So where
and
am I going?
And then you compare the similarities between the Moai statues and Göbekli Tepe, and you go even further back.
Well, and the thing with the Moai statues is they can't really... why was it they can't date the rock that the statues are made out of?
Because it's made from like basalt rock. And it's basalt and like volcanic ash, I thought, right?
So what they've done is they've dated the platforms, that the ones that are standing, they've dated those platforms. And those are only, 300 or 400 years old?
Well, what's interesting about that, though, is like we kind of have proof that these statues have been moved since they've been created, right? Because like you look at that one platform with the seven, right, that are all facing the different way that we were speculating maybe these are the divine, you know, seven that have some type of importance. They actually, one of their platforms actually has an old basalt fucking Moai head that's part of the platform, right, that they used to build it.
It's like a foundation stone.
Yeah. Right?
Well, yeah, these Moai are, I don't think they're actually out of, like, basalt's like, is that the hard stone?
That's the hard stone. And then
the Moai, I think, are all out of the softer, tough stone or whatever.
No, yeah, some of the older ones, like the one that's part of that platform, is made out of basalt.
So underneath, the one's made out of basalt. So a much, much, much harder stone to cut.
Yeah, which they speculate, like those ones, like you look at it too, it's way more weathered and worn than all the other ones, right? Like it looks quite a bit older.
They really had to like brighten it up on the screen to show you the head. Like, I think if they hadn't added that, you'd be like, oh man, just a rock. But no, once they kind of point out that it is a head, you're like, oh yeah, I can't unsee that. That is a Maui head.
Moai head. So two different types of stone, like a softer one, easier to cut and move, lighter. The heavier basalt as a foundation, but not just the heads. This is the one thing I had no idea about Easter Island. Like have we talked about Sacsayhuaman before?
Sexy human
in Peru.
Sexy human, eh? Yeah.
Just outside of Cusco. Like the fortress. They say
Prince
the fortress.
Cusco,
like in Peru.
Like the llama? Right.
The city?
Prince Cuscos or Cusco? No? Emperor's New Groove?
Couscous? Couscous?
Lion, no?
No, Emperor's New Groove. That's 25 years, buddy. Gone.
Yeah,
my kids haven't got there. My kids haven't got there yet.
It's unreal.
Anyways, so Sacsayhuaman and these Puma Punka and these ancient, like, they attribute them to the Inca. Those stones that are like, you know, 100 tons, and they look like they were molded and together into like a perfect wall where you can't even put like a piece of paper between them. No mortar, just perfectly formed with all these crazy angles and shapes. Which I thought was only there, and maybe there's some stuff similar in Egypt. But on Easter Island, it's called Ahu Vanapu. Pull it up for you boys. It's fucking insane. This exact same crazy megalithic construction on Easter Island, only in a couple spots visible. So maybe perhaps more under the water. But out of the basalt, out of the hardest stone imaginable, looking like it's been formed. We gotta fucking pull this up. It's insane. So, do those look familiar?
Yeah, I mean, listen, how many different times have we talked about the fucking credit card rocks, right? And like,
it's
in
kind of like
Machu Picchu,
Baalbek,
right?
Those huge. Well, Baalbek was impressive just because the size was like 1,300 tons or whatever. Yeah. But these ones are the similar fashion in the perfect. It's a perfect retaining wall or foundation wall or whatever it is. It's on this island, and the locals don't know who built them. Like, they were there since they can remember, It's not, there's not like oral traditions of like, oh, our ancestors built these. It was like our ancestors found these.
Well, same with the Moai though. Like they basically say the Moai basically walked to where they are now. And that's how they got placed where they are.
Well, so I've heard that, but I also heard that they actually did, there's oral traditions of them moving the Moai, but not necessarily carving the Moai.
I've heard, the one that I read is that they say that the Moai walked to where they are now.
Well, I've also seen, I mean, I've seen video of the guy who shows that you could walk them with the ropes and the numerous people all pulling them and they stand up and they just kind of wiggle them.
Like, well, not, I mean, I don't discount that you could move these stones. But what I'm getting at is that these stones were there and maybe these people... They came over from whichever direction. Was it from Peru and back or from...
They were already there.
They were there and then they became like a cultural icon. Like they made them their own. Like they decorated the walls, kind of like these other ancient sites we talk about sometimes. Like,
well, we've talked about that about Egypt too, but maybe the pyramids are way older and that the history, you know, has just been because cultures found them and then...
Well, the history of Egypt... around like, them. Like those, like the great pyramids are at a timeline. And as you go farther in time, which you think pyramid building might get better, they actually get worse and they fall apart faster. And
when you always hear that line of like, you know, ancient Egypt's so old that it actually had like ancient Egypt historians on ancient Egypt.
Well, they always say Cleopatra is closer to the iPhone than the building of the pyramids, right?
Yeah.
It's just fucking crazy.
Which is insane. Yeah,
that is fucking nuts.
But anyway, so yeah, like we have this ancient megalithic building technique on this island seemingly out of nowhere.
Well, it does start to look like, you know, it pointed out in the show too, it does look like when you start to look at where all these statues are, and how many there are, and then these retaining walls and just how much was going on. It does seem like there was some sort of like giant project being worked on, right? On this island for whatever reason. And I mean, there's just not enough there to sustain this level of like
100%,
right? Of how much shit there is there. Like there's just not enough on the island as we know it to like warrant all this, in my opinion.
Yeah, like looking, which may have been a product of like the early habitation. So some of the theories go that when the earlier settlers, indigenous people who settled on Rapa Nui got there, like it was the island had much more tree cover than it did. Like I'm not a lot, like being an isolated island, you know, you just, like those kinds of islands, it's like you're going to be susceptible to like high winds and stuff like that. And it's not great for trees really any grow, kind of yeah. large growing trees and things like, but those that were on there, in order to prepare the land and make it a bit more arable and being able to be farmed, like they practice what I believe they do have evidence of them doing like slash and burn farming, where they would cut down the trees and burn the trees. And then that would return nutrients to the ground, allowing them to plant crops for a certain amount of time. And then once they got past that, what some archaeologists have kind of said that is what they did, because there is evidence of them having these things called rock gardens, where essentially they would just smash up rocks by hand, like, and just spread it out and then be able to plant stuff there. So you would, you know, would increase the, you'd have nutrients in the ground. Plus it also keeps things from like flying away with the high winds and stuff like that. You can like plant stuff like within the rocks and stuff like that. And they would grow stuff like sweet potatoes. I think they said yams and bananas was one of the things that they had brought with them. Which is like a common practice in most of like the Polynesian islands, was like bringing bananas with you. So, which I learned about, that bananas cannot be spread by animals mostly.
They can't be spread by birds or wind. They grow by shoots.
Like they don't have seeds. Banana trees don't have seeds. They have like, they reproduce by shoots, which have to be spread mostly by humans. So I thought that was pretty interesting, but yeah, it's like, but one of the impressive things was those rock gardens, which a newer study, I think they released this year, they did like a big LiDAR study of Easter Island, and they kind of highlighted the areas where they have most of those rock gardens. And that's where they get some of their more contemporary population estimates about being like, if you go off of the rock gardens, the population, like when the Europeans arrived and they had like maybe, you know, their estimates were like 3,000, 4,000 people total. And then there was these estimates of four, like, no, maybe there were 15,000 people there at one point. They're saying now that maybe it did not get it. Like there was never like 15,000 people. You're like maybe 5,000, like, according to like, if you like taken the data from the rock gardens and like estimates on how much
food we need for per person, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
But I mean, now
it is okay. It's a tiny island. So it makes sense that it wouldn't be a huge population.
Say you push that number down to 5,000, like the study's kind of looking at. To me, that makes it even more unbelievable that that number of population or even less took on all this work of carving all these stones.
Well,
like,
I mean,
you would have to.
No, I agree. I was just going to say, like, I agree, like, in the fact that in order to take on the massive challenge of rock carving and sculpting and moving, you need a lot of excess time and energy and resources. Like, if you're just trying to survive on a tiny island, the last thing you're going to get a bunch of people to do is let's go carve.
Move 30 tons stone.
Let's spend just thousands of calories a day just chipping stone and trying to move it and lift it and levers and pulleys and try and get those fuckers to
I've
the
seen
beach.
Naked and Afraid. All right, like, I get it. These guys need calories to do anything.
Calories like are fucking precious, man.
You're already facing the elements. Like you're probably more time spending fishing and agriculture of trying to, you know, survive than, you know, let's go ahead and carve 500 giant fucking stone heads and then let's just bury some of them for fun. Where they sit.
I would imagine like they're not buried because
some are.
It's like
there's no evidence.
Like they're not purposely fully buried. Yeah. Is what I'm saying.
But, well, before like, we go a little farther
over time,
I just want to go touch back on because Dan did say about the bananas, right? So there's evidence that the Polynesians brought bananas with them and planted. But what they also found, what I was talking about before, is banana fibers that carbon dated to 3,000 years ago. Which that's kind of when Hancock kind of got a hold of that. He's like, oh, so well before we think the Polynesians made it. Because conventional thinking is this is like the last stop for the Polynesians. They had inhabited all the other islands that they did, and this was like one of the last ones. So just in a few hundred years, you also don't see like the progression of like, oh, here's a tiny head that's 3 feet tall, you know? And then they get better and bigger and more advanced and like, you don't see that progression. So it's like, here are all these fucking heads. They're huge. You're like, okay, why? Why do they have so many fucking giant heads on say they only had 3,000 or 5,000 people.
And they're all like intricate and too, right?
Hundreds of heads.
And they're all different. Like it's almost like a terracotta army, right? They're all kind of personalized. None of them are the same.
So now after watching this and like reading about these fucking heads and this culture, I got a theory. You know where it's going, but first we're going to take a short beer break. We're going to be right back. Woo!
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible, hand-picked gifts for everyone on your lists, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that's exactly what I wanted feeling. Uncommon Goods scours the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. That's right. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site. I've got really into fitness lately, so when we found some acupressure recovery socks, some fitness and recovery massage cubes, we found 3-in-1 Doggy and Me water bottles for taking your friend out on a hike. You might as well pick up an Adventure Essentials Survival Kit. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. So shop now before they sell out this holiday season. So to get your 15% off, go to uncommongoods.com/alien. That's uncommongoods.com/alien for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
All right, we're about to get wild on some theories. Is that what we're about to do?
Baby.
Go!
Woo! Woo! All right, so we got, talked about the history, the modern history of the modern people. It seems to be pretty legit, pretty accurate. The Polynesians came over, set up shop, brought some bananas, made rock gardens. Not doubting any of that. That's all has happened, all documented. What I am doubting is who built the fucking statue, the heads, and who built Ahuvanapo, those megalithic walls. So now I've talked about draining the earth of water and finding those, the archipelago where you could pretty much like island hop. You wouldn't even need to have ocean faring canoes. You could really just paddle from one to the other, stop, go, go, go. It wouldn't be hard to get there. That's if you had got to the mainland first. And now here's another thing. So, in the last 10 years, we've had those DNA studies. So people all around the world giving up their DNAs to the corporations to be cloned in the future.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's the Amish, right? I don't know, the Mennonites? Who?
What?
Who owns 23andMe?
Who's I don't know.
DNA? I don't know my fucking stepdad was going on about it.
It's probably like the fucking the Mormons.
Mennonites. This is the Mennonites.
It's probably something the Mormons.
What? Mormons.
Probably the Mormons. Yeah.
One of the above.
Anyways, so we've had all these DNA tests now, and they got like those DNA groups from all over the world, different groups, different people. They can kind of see where people have migrated.
Halo groups.
The H groups. Exactly. So the predominant theory was, into America from the land bridge in the north, and then through like the opening in the glaciers and then peopling of the Americas, blah, blah, blah. But now it seems through DNA testing that they've actually found. So in 2015, they tested a bunch of like Amazonian tribes, and they had markers resembling people in Australia and Papua New Guinea and Taiwan. Pretty much like a Pacific DNA group. And then native peoples in North America didn't share this group. So seemingly that, peoples in North America probably came across the land bridge and down X amount of years ago. That number keeps getting pushed back. They have the Clovis people, but now there's people, they know that people have, they have like fossilized footprints that are now older than that. So we don't really know, but for sure, now what they're thinking is people came to South America from, so this ancient, some ancient culture came across and peopled South America and Easter Island and all these Polynesian islands. So like a different crossing, a different migration story of humanity. And that's brand new. So like, okay, well, that's super weird that we weren't expecting that. We're expecting to have kind of seeing that DNA group kind of like slowly drift down from North America to South America and all the rest. So that's the theory that some culture in prehistory had traversed the ocean, landed either on Easter Island first and made their way towards Peru, or Peru and made their way back through the archipelago chain and set up shop. Probably not just on Easter Island, probably on a whole bunch of those islands that are now submerged underwater. So if I just had unlimited money, just like extreme billionaire, I'd be fucking scanning all of them. I'd spend all my fortune scanning
You'd be
all.
Be like Batman, but Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I wouldn't be helping. I'd be using my money for no good except for finding ancient civilizations.
Yeah.
I could end world hunger and poverty. No, I'm going to find out what happened at the Younger Dryas impact. So we got these people this unknown people coming across, peopling Easter Island, this archipelago chain, Peru, yeah. Amazon. Because now we know, like, through LIDAR, the Amazon is just would have housed like millions of people at one time. They have structures, all the whole thing is full of grown over man-made structures. They haven't even begun to uncover how many. So we have this culture that comes across. This is just, now we're going straight theory, right? Because this is not, we know a culture had been to Easter Island before the current people that came across, but we don't know how, like, it could, is it 5,000 years? Is it 10,000? Is it 20,000? Who knows? But whoever this culture was had the technology to, like, shape stone and build those stone structures. Because we see them on Easter Island. We see them in Peru. We see them, like, you can kind of, like, see this culture, like, going across and building all this shit. Because even when they say, like, the conquistadors conquered, like, Cusco, like, Peru, it was, like, the final stand in those huge megaliths.
Yeah.
They just assumed, because the Incan culture had only really been around for, like, 100 years. And they assumed that they had built all this stuff. And that's kind of where it goes. But if you go now to, like, the oral traditions of the areas in Peru and stuff, they say, no, those are, like, built by the gods, like Machu Picchu and stuff. And then on top of those, kind of like how we see with these heads, there's these foundation stones, huge, perfectly molded megaliths. And on top, there's an obvious different style of building, right? So that, like, pretty much theory is that this is the lost culture, the lost pre-culture that peopled probably not this island, but a whole bunch of these places in the Pacific Ocean that were lost to flood and rising sea levels. It's fucking wild. And it makes so much sense now after you see it all. You're like, oh yeah, these people are only here a few hundred years. Where's the slow build of technology from, like, you know, our modern day stacked stone retaining wall, which it looks like garbage, to a perfectly fused, multi-sided, no mortar, unchanged through all of time retaining wall. Like, that's what these structures are. Like, there's no good answer. Maybe if you could somehow decipher those, what do you call them?
The Rongo.
Rongo tablets.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something in there about it. But so far, there is no one who can read those. It's fucking wild.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. So sometime between 12,800 years ago, I can't remember the dates, but Younger Dryas impact, right? We've talked about it before. I can't get out of my mind. It makes so much sense to me personally.
Now, see, I agree, but, like, building on that is, like, I was kind of thinking in my head, like, you know, we talked about mud floods before, right?
Mud floods.
Big mud flood guys.
Yeah, it was mud flood.
Mud flood. So, mud flood. I was kind of thinking, first off, is that in my head is that there was some sort of civilization, and this is, you know, whatever was going on in Easter Island, I kind of assume that this was, you know, kind of an outstretched arm of a greater civilization. Mm-hmm. Whether or not this was maybe a send off, like, you know, we kind of know it was at the end of this, like, archipelago. Why can't I say that word now?
Yeah.
Archipelago.
And so maybe this is where it was, you know, they would launch ships and stuff from, because this was, like, the last kind of peak until open ocean. But maybe there was some sort of, you know, civilization that was globe faring. And they were taking on some sort of monumental task or building these things to ship to.
That's not what they were doing.
Right. And, well, maybe you don't know. I know what the hell they were doing.
I know. I've tapped in.
So they were building these things and they were having crews, and it was a, you know, a big workforce on this big project on Easter Island. And then when we get hit with the biblical flood, because all these cultures talk about it,
flood even myth the everywhere.
East, right? Mud even flood. The, even mud the flood. Easter Island has, that case. And with those rising sea levels, it flooded Easter Island, flooded all the other islands in this chain, wiped out this original civilization. And then what is left is you have these heads in different states of burial from sediment from this global flood, right? That's sitting on this island now that are just remaining. So when the future civilizations come back to this, and, you know, like we kind of touched on earlier, they've just dug these things out from different things, build platforms for them, and stood them up because they have some sort of significance. Like if we were primitive people and you walked and you saw like giant stone fucking statues, you would think there is some importance to these things because
those are the gods.
It would be shocking. Yeah, it would be shocking. Going back to that, it's like even the Paracas candelabra, like to me, I'm like, when you're looking at this thing and it's in line with all these island chains, to me, it's like, it looks like some sort of like roadmap of like, if you were coming in back from the islands, you're looking at this thing and this is telling you where to go. Right. That's kind of the sense I get.
Telling you where to go, or just like a welcome, almost like this huge fucking welcome sign.
Yeah, it's so strange. But I just found it so fascinating that this island, you know, that we're supposed to believe is isolated, has their you know myths and everything line up so nicely with other cultures around the globe. You know, even speaking to this biblical flood event, this mythical flood event.
I agree with everything you're saying,
but get
as far as the globe spanning, you know, civilization, and you keep on going back to like, you know, what were they doing? What was the purpose for producing the Moai? Why are they making the Moai? Why are they shipping them out? What are they doing with them? What if these Moai are, I'm trying to think of a better word, but let's just put it, what if these Moai and this entire island is like basically like the Valley of the Gods? This is a mass grave site. This is where they take their fucking elders, whoever, the people who are special to them, and bury them in this isolated fucking island. And they use that. And these Moai that are all intricate and different, just like the Terracotta Army, are like what's effigies, I don't know, like these are basically their tombstones for their fucking their civilization. And the civilization that comes later, what if these people are like caretakers, and that's why they don't know the history, they don't know the language, they don't know anything, but their job is to protect this and take care of it, because this advanced culture used this as their final resting place for their fucking loved ones.
Yeah, I mean, caretaker. Like, so like they knew kind of, or, and the other way is these are civilizations completely separated by thousands of years, let's say. And just the sight of seeing these statues and stuff would just invoke that like religious thing. Like, these are our gods. We will take care of them. Don't even know why. Cause that's, they were just there. We show up on this island, these Polynesian fellows on this seafaring canoe show up. Hop aboard, pull up their canoe onto the beach, start roaming around, checking out. Oh, this is not bad. We can maybe set up shop here. Like, what the fuck are those?
Right?
What are those? Imagine that. You're just out on the, right now, middle of the ocean, some random island. You pull up, you jump aboard, and there's these fucking megaliths. You have no idea what they are. So fucking wild. You would instantly be like, well, these are fucking, that's my god now. I can see this god, right?
Yeah,
like all these like all the gods that we talk about or are in our scriptures, like you can't see them. They're, you know, kind of based on faith, but these are our gods. I can see this one. It's right here.
How in the mythical, like in the flood and the Younger Dryas weather anomaly and stuff like that, is there any talk about how sudden the sea levels rise?
Yeah, it's not as sudden as you think, but in a geological time, it's very sudden. They call it meltwater pulse 1A and 1B. And I think there's even like a two more smaller ones. But I think it's like, it's 400 feet over 500 years or something, which is enough. In a lifetime, you would see it go up a foot or two, which is a lot.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what the fuck? And then in a couple generations, like it's gone up 30 feet and you're like, whoa. right? So whatever happened at the Younger Dryas, they know something happened. There's a lot of people unsure if it's a comet strike on the ice cap that caused the weather shift and the first of it was rapid cooling for 1,000 years. Rapid, like almost overnight, rapid cooling, which is kind of like a nuclear winter. Like something got ejected into the atmosphere so thick, like a super volcano or asteroid impact or just something. So instant, pretty much overnight drop in temperature, and that was 1,000 years. And then almost as instantly a warming event, 1,000 years or like 1,200 years later, whatever it is. And they can see it in the ice cores. It's like, just like, we're slowly warming up from the ice age, right? Slowly warming up, and then just plunges back into the ice age worse than it's been in 100,000 years for 1,000 years. And then is like that for 1,000, 1,200 years. And then just as fast comes back up to where it was headed before. And then it brings us to, what are we in, the Holocene epoch or whatever, which is a now 10,000, 11,000 years of stable, relatively stable climate. So that's the theory, is if there was a civilization that existed during the ice age, they're obviously, the whole planet wasn't a fucking ice ball, right?
I know, it's just the thing for me is I'm like, I have a hard time picturing or just even coming up with a theory for like the slow sea, like in the biblical flood event. Like I get that over the course of, you know, couple generations, you know, coastal cities would have been gone, these island chains would have been gone. But I guess I'm like, this, the sense of panic, do you know what I mean? On the slow rise of, you know what I mean? Like, to, let's just say for the next 20 years, we're expecting 2 feet of water rise on all, like, that would be devastating. But at the same time, you're like, you know, it would be such a slow go. It's not like we would all be in fucking a state of panic or no, like, but if you were a biblical flood.
Like, say you were this advanced, I mean, for their time, advanced. Like, they didn't have fucking microprocessors, you know, all the technology we have, I don't think. But they had technology that we don't understand. So goes the theory. And if your whole job was to watch the stars and you knew what comets were coming, and they kind of like, it seemed like they almost predicted it was coming, like for whatever reason. So if something did happen and they watched the seas rise and they went through this nuclear winter, because first what happened is the nuclear winter would be way worse than this rising sea levels. The lack of sun, you wouldn't be able to grow crops, right? Livestock would die.
The famine and stuff would be worse.
The famine from the nuclear winter, it's not nuclear, obviously, we don't think, unless there's some aliens dropped a bomb, we don't know. That would be way worse than the plunge in temperatures initially.
Yeah.
Because if you're near the equator, the plunge in temperatures probably wouldn't, is it going from 25 to 20 degrees? This has been a nice summer. It's not bad. But if you're anywhere in the northern hemisphere, closer to where the ice field would have been, you would have went from like a date, like 5 or 10, I think right now we're at like 2 degrees from an ice age. So if the planet was to drop 2 degrees overnight, we would start a new ice age cycle.
Ugh.
Right? So that means scary. All like every winter you would get ice buildup, and every summer it would melt, but it wouldn't melt enough. And then the next winter would build on top, and over hundreds or thousands of years, you would build up these giant fucking ice caps again. We're only 2 degrees away from that. So if that happened 5 or 10 degrees, you know, within a month, right? All the, what it, say it did happen. You had a fucking comet, fragments, blows up ice cap, lights a bunch of fires, stuff gets ejected into the atmosphere, causes this winter, right?
Yeah.
That's like that's a civilization killer. And whoever was left, maybe they did have the knowledge or the know-how to be like, our time is done. Let us set sail around the world because we already know how to do it and see if we can preserve our culture any way we can. So maybe
that would make sense, like where you would, it makes sense for like Göbekli Tepe for me, where it's like, okay, you build this city and then you purposely backfill it because you're like,
time capsule. We have
to do this. It's a time capsule. But then for Easter Island seems to me like, I just get the sense that Easter Island's abandoned. Like it was abandoned at some point. That's the sense I got. And then re-inhabited later on, much later on.
Much later
on. These, thousands of years. Stones are moved and then they're placed and propped up. But like whoever the predecessors are that created them are long gone. Like by the time whoever comes in.
Well, and that's part of the problem with the theory. A lot of people are like, well, okay, where are the bones? Where are the remains? Where's all this? And maybe we are talking about 10,000 years of emptiness, and the earth has just swallowed up and reset. All their stuff was built, you know, from sea level to up 100 feet, even 200 feet, most of their structures. And then, so if you're...
Dude, I don't think the sea is very forgiving on bones.
No, if you say you had a city, let's just take Vancouver, right? Sea levels rose 400 feet, which swallows all of the land. The skyscrapers are still, you know, they're poking out of the water still, but then you get some bad weather and then the buildings crumble down and slowly over 1,000 years, 2,000 years, all that concrete and shit just gets ground to dust and buried under sediment. It's gone. The earth has cleaned itself. Whatever was there before, unless you could dig down 100 feet and you had all the technology, ground penetrating radar, you wouldn't even know there was a Vancouver. Gone.
It's crazy.
And if
that salt water is unforgiving.
Well, yeah, you got for metal, you got corrosion and just sediment, just getting buried under the earth, you know? Like, I bet you if you took up all the digs we've done in the world, like archaeological digs, it's probably like 0.001% of the surface area. Like, we, you know, even though we've dug a lot, the earth is fucking massive.
Which makes all the discoveries that we've made so far so much more, so you can appreciate them more. Like you said, like we found like footprints like that have been there for 30,000 years, or we find found perfectly preserved, like that ankylosaur, like just like
perfect, that's, yeah, like skeleton and
billion, bone. One in a billion chance of finding something like that. Even fossils are relatively rare.
Fossils, we've talked about before, like fossils have to have perfect circumstances to form.
Like we might have an idea of like 2% of the biological life forms that actually existed during those times.
For sure.
Like dinosaurs existed, Triassic, Jurassic, anything. But yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's a,
yeah. If we go with like,
think about it.
If we go just the timeline of modern humans, I mean, they keep pushing the timeline back. Like they find a new tooth or something like, oh, okay, maybe it's 200,000, maybe it's 300,000, maybe it's 400,000. Like anatomically similar humans, hundreds of thousands of years. The same potential, like if you could bring a person from 200,000 years ago, you could teleport them here as a child, you'd be able to teach them.
I've seen and seen
everything that we know because they're the same person.
Link.
Right? So if for hundreds of thousands of years, that's always the question, like have civilizations rose and then some type of weather or, you know, astronomical phenomenon has set us back.
Knocked us back down.
And then we're like, oh, wait, no, we're the first. We're a linear species. We start here and we end here and we just keep going. That's always the thing. But it's always the burden of proof, right? If you are going to claim this, you got to find something. But if there's nothing to find, like, what do we do? Speculate, really.
But why is Hancock so ill-received in the scientific community?
Because he irks archaeologists. Doesn't like he obviously, archaeologists for generations have studied this or that and they've come to conclusions. And not just Hancock, like anyone, just you could be a certified, you know, all the credentialed archaeologists and make some claims and you get ridiculed, blah, blah, blah. You got to defend yourself. And eventually, you know, 20, 30, 40 years later, oh, he was right about the Clovis first culture, right? There's been people like that, like, listen, there was a culture here before the current, like, North American people.
So like is that. It just because, like, his theories basically shit on, like, all archaeologists that they're all like, no, he can't be right because that means we're all wrong?
Well, I mean, in the end, a lot of speculation, right?
Yeah, of course.
And he's really well-spoken, so people take him very serious and... maybe more than they should. Who knows? But
when you look
in the end, when you listen to him talk, he just talks. He's not making He's like, I know there's no evidence, blah, blah, blah. When he wrote his first book, Fingerprints of the God, it was before Göbekli Tepe. Right? And people thought he was fucking mad that there was that we found all the civilizations that we know of. And then they found Göbekli Tepe and he went, a big sigh of relief. Like, I fucking knew it. I knew it. I knew there was something. And they found that and they found more. Now with now with LIDAR, they know that civilizations are way bigger and more advanced than we thought they were, especially in the Amazon and Mesopotamia and in the Mayans in that fucking Yucatan. All of that. Now we just know. And now what's another 20? Hancock's an old man now. In 50 years.
He's like 74 or something.
Yeah. Right? So in 50 years, are we going to find something that proves this kind of stuff right?
Well, I would say like when you look at his, just listen and just look at the points he's making. I mean, you do start to have to we're sure getting into a lot of coincidences if this isn't the case kind of thing.
Yep.
And that's where I me as a layman, an unstudied layman, I kind of look and I'm going, wow, these are, quite a few coincidences that we just have to kind of overlook to say that's not the case.
With him, it's like you do have to be critical of some of the stuff he does out there. I know one or two of the guys at least one of the guys in that Ancient Apocalypse show retracted one of their papers that they wrote about. They put out something about some astronomical correlations that they had seen and some petroglyphs or something. They were kind of saying these match up with this if you go back to this time. And then they printed a paper for it. They published the paper in a journal and then they had to print a retraction because they said that, oh no, we messed up, we our instruments were off.
That's kind of science, isn't it?
Yeah, but then that was what Hancock was being like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Before they had printed the retraction, he was saying that,
yeah, but we didn't talk about anything astronomical aligned as far as Easter Island.
No, not as Easter Island.
No, but yeah,
other claims would kind of a line that goes through that whole show.
Hancock for me is kind of like Bitcoin, right? It's the first of its kind. There'll probably be better stuff to come in the future, but it was like a groundbreaking, all right, humanity is maybe not as linear as we thought. That's kind of how I think of him. Okay? When we think about it, if we've been really around hundreds of thousands of years and we really only have about 6,000 years of documented history, where's the rest?
Because wasn't there a bit too where he was talking to someone on Easter Island who was saying that part of the legend is that these seven came and taught them agriculture,
yep,
and how to survive and sustain themselves on the island. To me, that makes it seem like they were cut off by a flood, and then there was remnants of a civilization who left to then kind of re-meet with all these other civilizations who have been cut off to teach them the basically bare necessities.
Yeah. How to fish.
How to survive.
Well, I mean, right? for that kind of stuff, anything go with myth, you're like, well, I mean, it's myth. So it could be right. Or it could just be myth.
It could also be the same myths though.
Yeah. That's also talked about it where it's like, these myths, a lot of them come from interpretations from European settlers. You have the myths from South America and those places, and a lot of them adopted European, their Christian mythos and some of their stuff, and then incorporated it into some of their stuff. And it's it only takes a couple generations for a culture to lose all of its thing, all of its tales, it's all of its folklore, all of its cultural stuff. It doesn't take that long. We saw it with, what was it, Tenochtitlan, where it's those people left that city, something happened there, whether it was plague or whatever, they left that city there, and then it was 200 years later and they're coming back and they're like, oh yeah, the gods built this city, but it was already there. It had been built there and lived in by people for hundreds of years, and then they just kind of, whatever happened to their civilization,
but then it's
in isolation.
When we start to talk about them having like the seven disciples or whatever that came, and like that story, are we saying that like that is just leached in from other cultures?
That's the concern with concern with some like with some scholars that study this stuff. That's like we're not sure, because when the Europeans arrived, they were already in decline. They were already losing some, and then by the time that we actually had people over there who cared to try and preserve some of their culture stuff, like, and get into it, they had lost all that. They lost the ability to read Rongo Rongo. Like, there was a point probably where they knew how to read it,
or they never knew.
But then, like 150 years later, after you guys said after the enslavement and then all that stuff, and then taking that stuff, people lost the ability to read it.
Well, they could have just brought like whoever settled could have just brought that from wherever they came from too, right? And then that's why they grabbed those Moai and put them up. It made them their seven, right?
Yeah. So for me, like the whole thing is the megalithic construction doesn't seem like just a random seafaring people who showed up on seafaring canoes and set up a thing. Like that was there. If I was going to present a theory, pure speculation, absolutely zero proof, there was a civilization that could traverse the seas, had landed on multiple continents, set up different places, the same building structures, these megalithic constructions, this insane, like a cataclysm that we couldn't even comprehend happened, because we have the records of it happening. We know something happened during the Younger Dryas, where if there was a civilization, if the Younger Dryas happened today, we're toast. It's over. We would not be able to sustain our population, maybe 5% of it, through farming, because it would all dry up. We have no sun, we'd be toast. So if there was a civilization during the Younger Dryas, they almost all but disappeared. Maybe a handful of survivors. Maybe they did set out to see if there was other people around the world, whatever, and they instilled some type of building knowledge. Who knows? But what I think happened, my personal theory is, there was a civilization that pretty much vanished and collapsed 12,000 years ago, whatever it is. And pretty much all remnants were gone except their megalithic buildings. And the survivors pretty much went back to hunter-gatherer and took thousands of years to repopulate and rebuild and relearn and resettle the places that, you know, 500 generations before were thriving cities full of art and culture and skill.
It's like who cares about the pyramids when you're trying to fucking
100%
survive, man. Right. And then as soon as you start to kind of get a grasp on things and you're like, okay, your civilization is starting to thrive, then you're like, hey, look at these fucking giant triangles.
So for me, like the theory that all these stories start with this myth of the seven and stuff. Sure. You have to start myth somewhere. But I think where Hancock kind of goes wrong is he leans so hard into that it was this culture who went and instilled culture back upon the world, where it was probably thousands of years of void. You know, hunter-gatherers, humans were in the tens of thousands worldwide, and we had to slowly rebuild ourselves back to then in Sumeria, whatever, 6,000, 6,500 years ago, we kind of got back to where we were pre this cataclysm. Thousands of years have passed. Everything we had got to was erased, and we kind of restarted. And then we resettled the places that ancestors so far gone in oral tradition built, and we resettled them, repurposed them, painted them, called them our god, like all that stuff. That's what I think happened. To me, it's not just like, oh, a group of seven sailed the whole world and retaught everyone how to farm and build. I mean, that's kind of where he's always lost me. Like there was just a few people. Unless those people are fucking aliens, then
what's he gonna say? Yeah, right? They're traversing time and space, not just fucking.
Yeah. Then we get even wilder, right? Then those people had become spacefaring, had left during the cataclysm, and came back and reinstilled.
Unless it's just us from the future coming back.
Unless it's so. In order to kind of link all those theories together, you kind of got to get a little farther out there than just like we sailed in these giant canoes around the world and rebuilt civilization.
Mm-hmm. Or Easter Island is a monitoring station for an extraterrestrial species, and all of those Easter Island heads are modeled after the Guardian, whose name is Nokar, and he was established here to defend us from the space spawn enemies that are
sounds
gradually
awfully like
taking
Warhammer
over
40K.
Nope, that's gargoyles.
Even better. Yeah, I mean,
that's
I,
a good
I,
episode too.
It's just really.
I would
cool.
love. It's somewhere I'd love to go. I'd love to go to Easter Island.
Gargoyles. What's the gargoyles? Then they bring
gargoyles?
The gargoyles to New York.
Gargoyles. I go to
Rapa Nui.
Theme park.
Rapa Nui. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to go to Rapa Nui?
Rapa Nui. Yeah. There's way more than I thought. I really just thought it was just the heads and people. They built them and that was it. And the story.
Bodies.
Did we even talk about that? Some of them on the hill had full bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, they're buried.
I mean, yeah.
It's crazy.
Because the ones in on the platforms have like a torso, but some of them that are on the volcano that are buried are full 20 bodies. Are 25 feet tall and they have a full body.
Yep. And carvings on the back.
So.
Back tats.
Yeah. So back tats.
Someone had resettled the island, found these heads, moved them, made them culturally significant. And that's the Polynesians did that. And that part of history is true because those people still live there. They have traditions. As far as they can, hopefully we didn't destroy them all when the Dutch went over there and stripped them, sent them all over the world. Like what would have not been lost if Europe during those times didn't just pillage the entire planet, you know?
Thanks, Europe.
Yeah.
Like just fucking pillage, man. It's not just Britain, it's Spain, it's Portugal, it's fucking the Dutch. It's all, everyone was just pillaging the world. Anywhere they landed, like, this is ours now, and you're our people, and we're going to take you and destroy all your shit.
We discovered it.
Yeah. Yeah, we discovered North America, you know, it was only 500 years old. Those people that we discovered there,
it's ours now.
It's ours. We're going to write the history. Do they still teach that Columbus was like the founder?
No.
I hope not.
That's why it's called Indigenous People Day and not Columbus Day anymore.
Okay, good. We don't have Columbus Day, but we never had Columbus Day. But I remember like in whatever, as grade 6 or 7, you're like, oh yeah, Columbus, you discovered North America, but there was natives there. I was like, wait, then didn't the natives already live there? Then who discovered? Didn't they discover it?
Ah, he discovered it. No, I think when I was in school, it was like they taught like the migration of over the land bridge is mostly the accepted theory at the time. And then it's just like, he showed, I think we were still in like, we were at the point where like, no, Vikings were the first Europeans to arrive in the Americas before Columbus.
Well, definitely, they definitely wasn't in Newfoundland in Canada. They found Viking settlements that are fucking 1500 years old or something.
Yeah, it's because we got the fucking Oak Newfies. Island money pit. Yeah. Everyone, they've been looking for the gold there forever.
I'm sorry. Yes, the Templars were here before the Vikings. My bad.
Yeah.
Right. Anyways, it's a really cool place, really cool theories.
Fucking check it out. Yeah, get into Easter Island. It's more than meets the eye.
It's more than eggs.
Yeah. It's more than just eggs. Where's the eggs? Where's the eggs?
We didn't even talk that they have a egg hiding.
Yeah, that. Complete. There was a complete cult based around hunting eggs.
Was that before though?
That was after. That was post. Actually, it's like they're saying that there's theories that cult replaced the Moai cult, like the belief system that it was like it supplanted it, and it became the Birdman cult. Is what it's called. That's what it's referred to.
The Birdman cult. Yeah.
The Birdman cult. Yeah, people can look it up. It's an interesting little cultural tidbit that they do have evidence of stuff and like what the entailed, like the rituals entailed. But yeah, it was essentially an egg hunt on Easter Island. It's fun.
Fitting.
Cool. All right, we got a couple new Patreon supporters that went to alientheorist.com. Hit that support tab.
And our big old sponsor, too.
Oh, shit.
And the big old sponsor came through again, pulling closer to the number one supporter of all time, Big Fat Monkey. Absolute legend.
Yep.
Let's go.
There's been talks about using his sizable donation for some awesome good of the show, some really, really, really good content, but we'll be coming more with that shortly. This week we got Groovy, we got Akem 713 and Nick Fell supporting the show this week. Thank you very much for supporting your boys.
Let's go. We need the horn sound.
That was pretty good, though, Dan.
Just do the horn sound, man. It's better than the board.
Do that.
And no one can copyright your voice.
That's true.
Except for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. That was fun.
All right. And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Peace.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant, Sweet Tango Apples, guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.